Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
One of the great givens in our society is the existence of charities. It's a confronting thing to contemplate where our society would be without them, extending help, hope, sometimes a lifeline to hundreds of thousands of Australians, even just economically. You take out charities and we lose something like $43 billion worth of good works in Australia. If they lose their way, the very fabric of Australia is at risk, according to two leading lights of the charity sector, a husband and wife. Anne Robinson, a lawyer and chair of World Vision, and Stephen Judd, CEO of Hammond Care, an independent Christian charity to people needing care, have just written a book together with Felicity Errington, Driven by Purpose, on the great challenges charities are facing at this moment. In the foreword, the CEO of World Vision, Tim Costello, says the timing of their contribution is prophetic. Anne and Stephen, welcome to Open House.
Pleasure.
Great to see you. Thanks very much for coming in. It's a scary prospect to consider a society without charity.
It is a scary thought. I mean, charities are actually a very significant component of our economy. It's more than $40 billion of our economy, about 4% of GDP. And they play a very significant role in helping be the conduit between how some Australians help other Australians and indeed overseas their fellow man.
It's just not economic, though. The economic thing is a big argument, but it's not just that, is it?
It's not just economic. It's also about how people help each other.
I'd add to that it's relational as well, because what sits behind those sort of numbers, and the numbers are large, they're big dollar numbers, they're big people numbers, are actually communities of people, whether it's around the local church or the local sporting club or any of these institutions. At the end of the day, they started as groups of people who came together to either care for other people or to provide the sort of networks in society that make it work.
Yeah. Part of the scene that you set about charity is doing a bit of a history lesson on charity, not only in Australia, but you take the whole notion of charity back to the early days of the Christian church.
Yes, it's interesting, Lee. I guess in the Christian community, we take it so much for granted that that's what charities do. But in fact, it's a foreign notion in most periods of time through human history and in a lot of societies that you care for the stranger. It's a common notion that you care for the person close to you, you care for your family first, you care for your local community, and you might care for people within your nation. But it's actually a foreign notion that you care for the stranger who goes without outside of those sort of social networks. And so if you read someone like John Dixon's writing on good deeds that changed the empire, you go back to the first century AD and a mammoth change, a dramatic change in society happened when a group of Christian people, motivated by the gospel of Jesus Christ, started caring for people outside of their own group. And it was revolutionary.
What were the sort of things that they did?
They cared for the people who were hungry, without clothing. They took a collection for the poor. Generally, in Jerusalem, there was the collection throughout the Asia Minor region, as you read about in the New Testament. We are so used to that notion and we've normalised it, but actually it wasn't normal. It was very unusual.
And indeed, the Emperor Julian in the 4th century was very concerned that Christians were almost going to take over the Roman Empire by stealth, as he put it, because they were, in his view, doing these things by visiting people in hospitals or in prisons and dealing with the poor who weren't their own.
How dare they?
How dare they? Yes. That's right. And he was sort of basically entreating his own priests of his pagan temples to do the same. But it failed because there wasn't that motivation. And I guess the book, Driven by Purpose, really is about that motivation. The motivation isn't just Christian. The motivation for all charities is the driving force. And most charities start small, and they start with a very clear purpose. I guess probably the issue that we're writing about in the 21st century in Australia is that in our research over the last 5 years, we found that a lot of charities had perhaps become less clear about what that identity and purpose, that who and why was now. they became a little bit more confused. Were they merely historical associations that doing what they'd already done? Were they, because they were increasingly professional, which is a good thing, had they merely just become commercial outfits in drag? Or were they, because they were receiving government subsidies for part of their work, had they become government contractors? Our argument is that they shouldn't be any of those things. They should have a very clear sense of their identity and purpose.
How do they do that?
How do they do that?
Yeah.
I think you can almost revisit it. You can re-energise it. You can sort of step back from your day-to-day, because the who and the why is important, that DNA, if you like, of the organisation, because it actually informs what you do and where you do it and how you do it, rather than the other way around. It shapes those things that you do. And if you don't get that first bit right about the who and the why, you're going to be at sea. You're going to be almost at the mercy of that supporter who comes in with a great idea. And you think, oh, well, that person's going to give us some dollars to do that. Maybe we should. Yeah. Even though it's not who you are or why you exist. Or on the other side, governments might say, hey, come and do this. And you'll do it just because you think, oh, well, we should do it.
The history of Australian charities is quite unique in the faith-based makeup. That identity is something entirely unique.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lee. There are charities in almost every country. However, it's interesting that the number of charities in Australia that are based on a faith commitment seems to be higher than other equivalent sort of countries. And so if you look at the statistics just based on, say, size, which is a rough guide, but it's a guide, a very large proportion, in fact, a larger proportion of charities in Australia are faith-based than, say, equivalent countries like the US and the UK. You know, we think that's partly because of the history of when the Australian colony was settled. It makes quite an interesting story, which we've explored a bit in the book, which is that at just the time of the evangelical revival in England, you had a colony, a penal colony, being set up. And interestingly, a person like Wilberforce, who is better known by most of us as being a campaigner against slavery, was also actually a campaigner for prison reform. And it seemed that his influence was quite significant in those early days of the colony, both to get chaplains to the colony, but also the earliest charities. And so the timing was just right, perfect storm sort of situation, that you actually had quite a lot of influence very early on. So we have grown up in Australia, in certainly post-white settlement, with an expectation that there are these Christian and other religious-based charities. So there are a lot more of them in Australia than other countries.
Fast forward to today, the timing of your book is quite significant, that it comes now.
Yes, it is. You'd have to be living under a rock not to have noticed that there's a whole lot of reform going out at the moment, particularly the 1st of October. I think most people are aware that there's going to be a new charities commission called the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission. That's when it starts up. And all charities are going to have to be registered through that body. There's going to be a lot of change. There's going to be a lot of change to the regulation, reporting, definition of charity, and a lot of the tax arrangements that sit behind.
You'd think that's a good thing?
Absolutely, It's a good thing. Most of the package of the reforms that we've got have been things that the sector has been asking for years and years. This is not a recent conversation. It really started probably back in 1995, where there was a first report of the Industry Commission then on this sector. But it's been coming for some time. The Productivity Commission did a really important report in 2010, and so did the Henry Review on Taxation come out with some very important recommendations on the tax stuff that sits behind charities regulation.
With the separation of church and state, is there a challenge there with what you call the elephant in the room, that there are so many of these faith-based charities being regulated by a secular government?
Well, we're already regulated by the secular government. I know there's some people believe that they're a little bit leery of the commission and saying we don't need more regulation, but we've already got it. The one port of call for charities at the moment with the Australian government is the Australian Taxation Office. Now, the ATO may be many things, but its primary focus isn't charities. It's to defend and sustain the tax base of the Australian Commonwealth. And this is sort of a little bit on the side. And so there's not that focus. The Commission will give that focus. And it will actually also be good for Australians, the average Australian, so that they can actually see what a whole raft of different charities. At the moment, it's very hard to find out. There's not that transparency. In what there'll be one portal so that everyone can report, can see a whole range of charities. The other thing is there'll be harmonisation of fundraising across states. At the moment, if you're a national charity, you've got to comply with all of those states and territories and what their fundraising rules are. And so there'll be that harmonisation occurring over time. So I think it's actually to be welcomed. Sure, we have to make sure that some of the details right, but I believe it's a positive move, not just for charities themselves, but for Australians who support charities.
Indeed. And that it would continue and flourish in the future. You've done a great deal of work researching the health of the Australian charitable sector, which to my surprise comprises 600,000 different not-for-profits. And I think you were surprised when you went out and researched the CEOs of numbers of those organisations.
Yes. The first thing, though, is, isn't it interesting, I mean, that we often refer to organisations that benefit the community as something that are what they're not.
Yes.
Not-for-profit.
Good point.
And that seems strange to us. So that's why we've actually used the term almost stubbornly, charitable or charity. And that's because I think your listeners know what a charity is, that it's actually a means by which they support other Australians or their fellow man overseas. That's demonstrated by their own language. When they're actually if they go to a charity dinner, they give to charity. They don't give it a not-for-profit. If a footballer is in trouble and is fined for something and gives their money away, they give it to a charity. They don't give it to a not-for-profit.
Yes.
I think in our discussions with chief executives, etc., over the last 5 years, what disturbed us was they weren't clear about who they were or why they existed. Now, that's not true for everyone. For example, I spoke to Tony Nicholson, who is the chief executive of the Brotherhood of St Lawrence in Melbourne, and he sort of, quick as a flash, when I asked him who owned him, he said, the people of Melbourne and our business is poverty. So he had a very clear sense of what Brotherhood was. So I suppose we're trying to restore the idea of the language of charity because and some people think that that might be quaintly anachronistic. I actually think it's about grace, and the word charity resonates with that term grace. And I mean, as a Christian, that's so very important to me because charities are about fellow man supporting other fellow men and women. So that's very important to us.
Grace with a degree of steely resolve to know who you are, what you're on about,
right,
and what you do.
That's right. And for the Christian, engaging in charity is an essential component of what it means to follow Jesus. I mean, he didn't go around the Middle East just preaching. He actually also healed as well. He didn't just go around healing. He preached as well. So they're both very much related. And it's a grace that is lavish and generous and knows no bounds. And I think there's a key there about it being relational. It's not contractual, it's relational.
It's a big juggle when it's also a business that's got to be economically viable and sound in its governance.
Yeah, but if you start at first principles, at that identity and purpose, and we keep on banging on about that.
Sure, for good reason.
I'm a firm believer in the genius of the and. I believe that you will find that financial way, and I actually believe that charities aren't there to be comfortable and to be secure. They should be taking risks for people whose lives are at risk.
Tim makes the important point in his Ford, Tim Costello, that it's more than just existing but making a difference in the world.
Yes, and I think organisations that do have a very clear sense of mission and identity, going back to the point that Stephen just made, that will quite naturally play its way out in strategy, being very businesslike, being very hard-headed, actually, about the numbers. But I've been on boards long enough to know what it's like sort of sitting in the governance seat, that you really have to have a clear sense. It's a hard enough job to do without having a clear sense of what you're there for, what the organisation exists for. As soon as you take that piece out, you're at sea. You're not just there to make surpluses. You're not just there to make widgets. You're not just there to employ people. You don't have any sort of framework without that sort of identity. So I think it's not just a nice thing to have. It's fundamental.
Yes, and necessary.
And necessary.
Is it too cute to describe it as have that hard head but with a soft heart?
That's not cute at all.
Yeah.
I think some of the most effectively compassionate, gracious people I can think of in the world that I've come across over the years have been actually quite hard-headed.
And quite determined
and quite
to do
determined.
This well, for good reason.
And very determined.
Yeah. So can I ask you finally, both of you, in all the wealth of experience that you've had, one story each that would demonstrate what keeps you hanging in such a challenging arena at times?
Look, I can think back to, for me, so I've been on the World Vision Board for 12 years now. I remember very vividly, because you tend to remember your first encounters of certain experiences very vividly, and it was late at night in the little town of Livingston in Zambia, which is near the Zimbabwe border, near where the river sort of goes over the Victoria Falls, the Zambezi River. And we were taken out to visit some of the young kids who were working in it was called a Corridors of Hope program, which were young people going out trying to get your girls who were working they were sexually being trafficked on the trucking routes going up through the centre of Zambia. And these young kids went out. They had education and had a ticket out of there. They didn't have to stay. But they went out night after night, and they took me along, and I was very aware of that because I was the only sort of vague white person there. To see what they did, and they took us to a drinking house which was full of hundreds of kids drinking homebrew in cut down PET bottles.
What age?
They would have been, well, I asked, how young are these girls in the sex trade? And they said the youngest probably would be about 10 through to probably late teens. Some of them had babies on their backs. The young kids were absolutely sloshed. And one of the young boys came up to me with tears flowing down his face and said, "I have these are kids mostly who were orphans, right, AIDS orphans. I have no mother, I have no father. What can I do? I don't want to do this. Please help me." And for me, that has been a strong, motivating experience. And I vaguely mumbled something about, well, this is what we're here to do. It didn't convince me or him probably. But for me, that was been quite a. I remember back when I'm sitting in meetings, trying to work out strategy, doing all the hard-headed stuff. That's the motivating heart stuff.
What a great motivation, Stephen. What about you?
I'm not sure if I can come anywhere near that, really. But I do. I mean, as you know, I'm chief executive of Hammond Care, and that was founded by Bob Hammond in 1932, 80 years ago. And when I think about what he did in the Depression, when there was 40% unemployment, and he decided he needed a land settlement scheme to actually support people who had been evicted, because in those days, if you didn't, most people didn't own their own house, so you lost your job and then you lost your house. And sort of at the age of 60, he cashed in what we would now call a super to buy land for that. And I mean, I think, you know, we worry about our superannuation and what's going to happen to us when we retire and that sort of thing. And you think, why bother? Why don't you actually focus upon what you can do today?
Thoroughly enjoyed our chat. And it's a very important contribution, I'm sure, that you are making, and certainly in the months ahead will make, to the charitable sector and to Australia and many hundreds of thousands of people. And Robinson, Stephen Judd, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure, Lee.
All our best.
Thanks, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.